You're listening to Leicester Build Back Better Stories. Conversations about how communities across Leicester are planning for change following the pandemic. Over six programmes, we'll hear from people at the forefront of civic society in Leicester, and we'll find out how they are planning to do things differently in response to Leicester's extended lockdown. For further information about each of the topics covered in the programmes and extended versions of the conversations, go to the Leicester Stories website, leicesterstories.uk. Recovery from the coronavirus lockdown has got many people who volunteer and work for community and civic society groups thinking about what it means to build back better in Leicester. Coupled with the climate crisis, there will be no returning to what was the old normal. What the new normal needs to be, however, isn't quite clear yet. I'm Rob Watson, and over the summer, I've spent time chatting with people who work for charities and civic society organisations in Leicester about what they think building back better means in practice, and what we need to do so we are ready for the next set of challenges. Over six programmes, we're hearing from people across Leicester who've been telling us what they think about the city and in what way they think life in Leicester can be improved. In this fifth episode, we'll hear from Helen Petman, who is the editor of the Evington Echo, a community newspaper with a focus on local environmental issues, and from Ben Lowe, who is an environmental campaigner. To start things off, Ryan Clayton, Leicester Stories community reporter, has been out asking people what they think of Leicester and what makes Leicester feel like home.
I'm just out and about, and we're asking people about the slogan "Build Back Better." Have you heard of it before?
No, mate. I'm not from here, mate.
Oh, right.
I'm from Scotland, remember?
It's basically about building things back better in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. Is there anything about this city or anywhere else you'd like to see improved upon as a result?
Only if they. See, to be quite honest with you, I don't know how you're going to accept this, right? I thought the coronavirus was a wee bit over-exaggerated myself. Now that everything's back into play, just let everything just ease on and
yeah, you can.
Get back to normal, Just ease into it then, slowly. And don't go all panic stations and all that, you know what I mean? But I've had my two jags anyway, so
yeah.
I've been all right that way, you know. But
I think the city needs a bit more support from the council, to be perfectly honest. I think that the infrastructure at the moment is still pushed mainly towards cars, where you're looking at a lot of people after COVID or bicycles, walking, a lot of them are trying electric vehicles. I think the council should be getting in the schemes with that as well, to start renting out things like electric scooters for people instead. I think the cathedral's really nice. I'm saying the cathedral, where Richard lies, I think that's a really nice piece, and I think they've done a great transformation around that area as well. I think the surrounding countryside in Leicestershire is phenomenal. I think that's some of the best in the country. Leicester itself as a city, I don't think anything it's got really shouts out to the rest of the country to say come here.
Is there anything that you feel like could be built on better or improved?
The infrastructure is shocking. Bus transport's terrible. All the public transport's terrible, to be fair, and then the council wonders why people take cars, and the reality is they take cars because there's very little choice for them.
Leicester years ago was a great place to live. Leicester now, if I had a choice, I wouldn't be living in it. Let's put it that way. It's gone downhill very, very quickly. Yeah. Very quickly. There's just too much drugs, too much. It's awful. It's awful to live in Leicester now. Whereas years ago, you didn't get all this. This weren't an issue in Leicester before, all these fights and stabbing and everything else. One of those, isn't it? Your kids used to argue, but that was it. The argument was over. You didn't run in the house and get a knife and come back out and stab somebody with it. So, no.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Hey, I don't suppose you've got a moment to answer some questions?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, just walking around asking people about the city, wondering how you felt about
it. What, today or in general?
Just in general. Today, in general, whatever.
Wow, I think there's a lot to do in Leicester, actually. I've been here for 5 years, and, you know, I really enjoy the town centre. I love the fact that it's multicultural, so you get to meet lots of different people. I'd rather be in London, but... But yeah, Leicester's nice, yeah. I think. Yeah.
Is there anything about the city you feel makes it stand out, makes it unique?
Especially the Space Centre, I think. Yeah, I love the Space Centre. I think the way they've done the town centre, it's really nice, especially the food court. Maybe more things to do, maybe more activities and stuff, I think. But I don't know, I wouldn't change too much.
Yeah. Build back better. Build back better. Yep. My immediate reply is, A, I've never heard of that slogan. And I would have to give it serious thought before I could give you an intelligent answer. Poverty. I mean, before I came out here, I looked at my news feed on the computer screen, and what immediately caught my eye was in the northern part of England, social services are seeing quite an increase in the number of requests for children to be put into homes because families, parents can't afford, you know, to feed them and clothe them and you know, the responsibilities that go with having a family. And I just, before I came out here, wanted to do my shopping before the rain comes down. And I just thought there's something fundamentally wrong with the economic modelling, if I can describe it that way, where, you know, I'm fortunate, I'm retired and comfortably off. I worked hard and I've achieved what I wanted to achieve from an enjoyable career, and I'm now able to relax, enjoy my coffee and enjoy, you know, my retirement years. You know, I'm 73. And yet the converse of my situation is that, you know, there are people elsewhere in this country that are far worse off, that have difficulties, immense difficulties. Something's wrong, you know. Something's wrong, you know. Maybe we need a radical rethink of how we address society's, you know, mores, difficulties, you know. You know, levelling up, yes, but you know, how we do it, I'm really not sure how. I think it really does need something radical to achieve that. I find myself, as I get older, you know, I do worry. I'm glad I'm at the age I'm at. I'm 73, you know. But, you know, kids coming out of university, colleges, out of apprenticeships, you know, will they have a job? Will they have a successful life? Will they have a happy life? Will they have a healthy life? You know, questions not easy for me to answer. Very important questions. You know, quality of life is so important. You know.
I'm not really sure it's been... it's one of those quite nebulous phrases that could mean all sorts of different things. I got the impression it was just kind of a, you know, vaguely positive kind of a broad appeal message to try and sort of say, all right, yeah, let's get and do it. But I don't think that it's, there's certainly not any lengthy explanation as to what the government means by that, as far as I'm aware. Well, I mean, I would say to build back better would be to acknowledge, you know, the absurdities that have been revealed by the pandemic. I'd say, you know, to build back better, you know, shouldn't mean, you know, work very hard to build back to where we were, particularly with work culture. I mean, I think the fact that with the technology that we now have, everyone's sort of working from home in quite an efficient way. I think that really needs to be jumped upon, because the 9-to-5 and the 5-day working week seem quite archaic all of a sudden. There was a study in Iceland that went quite well recently, where they found that the 4-day working week, which wasn't necessarily, it was reported as the 4-day working week, but it was actually a reduction in hours that, you know, equaled 4 days rather than everyone taking the Friday off. But that's the you know, version of it that's most popular in the public consciousness here, I think. But they actually found that working less produced the same productivity, if not more. It was like more efficient to allow people more time to recuperate. And I think, you know, it's something that's kind of an open secret, I suppose, that everyone tends to pretend to work. They spend a lot of time pretending to work and performatively, you know, being at their desks. And it's just ridiculous. You're not going to get the best out of your employees, and you're actually going to, you know, you're going to burn them out. And it seems to me, you know, very obvious that, you know, forcing people to spend all their time beyond what they're actually, you know, beyond the capacity that they have to actually work, is just going to, you know, bring out not the best in them. You know, it's going to be inefficient. And I think, like, yeah, if you want to build back better, you know, maybe you should build back more efficiently. And yeah, having this kind of archaic work culture where everyone's grinding for the majority of their lives really doesn't seem to be particularly conducive to that. I think everyone has a limited capacity for work, and I think billing it not as, unfortunately, I think billing it as something that's beneficial to people is not necessarily the right way to bill it. You know, that should be part of the messaging, but I think, you know, really selling it as, you know, proven to be efficient and proven to actually, you know, get better results is the way, right? You know, I think probably more studies need to be done, you know, to really sell that. But it seems, you know, I personally, you know, I've worked in academia for the last few years as a PhD student, and, you know, being able to work whenever I want, I've done a huge amount of work, I've had to do a huge amount of work, but I don't get up and do a 9-to-5. That's not, I don't think that's really how anyone functions. The 9-to-5 itself was, I think it's a relic from the Industrial Revolution, in the sense that was when the workers would go to factories, basically, because that's when the machines would be turned on. It made sense at the time when that became, you know. Do I think there's anything specifically for Leicester? Yeah. I think it was interesting to see the city centre kind of desolate when the lockdown was on and no one coming in. I'm not sure it really pertains to the Build Back Better message, but it would be nice. It'd be nice to see people, treat the city centre as, you know, more than just a place to go and get pissed on the weekends. I don't know. I don't see many people coming in from the suburbs necessarily at any other time. So I don't know. But I don't think that's really a Build Back Better question. That's a tricky question. You can't just throw money at it and expect people to necessarily know the needs of all the people that use the city centre. Who do we build back better for? Yeah. And it's easy to say everyone, and that is kind of the obvious answer. But then how do you build back better for everyone is then the follow-up question to that. To which yeah, more research needs to be done. But yeah, I think that is the question that people need to be asking themselves, is if you're building back better, who are you building back better for? You know, and who's going to be drawn to the area? Because there's messaging in the way that you build things, and you know, people can see that things are for them or meant for them, or they interpret, you know. If you think about, you know, storefronts or restaurant fronts, people kind of know what restaurants they'll like approximately by looking at the, you know, the decor and the way it looks outside. So
it's quite a hard question, that is, because as we're talking about it now, I'm not just thinking about the environment. I've started to think about how we're going to react in society and how our feelings are going to be. And we've all kind of switched off emotionally. And I'm already finding it difficult to be around people. You know, I'm feeling overwhelmed at the moment. And I think, you know, people that are depressed at home, they're going to find it the hardest, because we've not known anything better. Nobody's had the support. I didn't think this was going to happen after this pandemic, but it's really difficult. I've not really enjoyed it. I have been out on a social. I went to a party just a couple of weeks back, and it was a graduation party they did in the garden, and I didn't realise until I was in the moment that I was finding it too overwhelming. I was getting headaches. I couldn't sit in the crowd. I went inside and everybody was saying, "What's wrong with you? This isn't you, Tara. You know, you're normally bubbly and you like to keep the crowd going." I couldn't do it. I sat on my own in the corner. I put the TV on because that's all I know. And this was like a full, you know, blown party, and I had the TV on. And I just didn't like it at all. I thought there's too many children running around. All it's about is food and everybody just getting merry, but I'm not used to this. I can't adapt just like that. It's not a switch of a button. I've learned that I can adapt. I can, like, go into myself and just be with my own group of, say, me and my daughter. Because when it was pandemic, I had a bit of an abusive relationship. So I ended up leaving my partner and my son as well. So from four of us in the household, it became two. And I don't know if that's made me get worse off. And now I'm so used to it, just me and my daughter, I don't even like visitors coming. I feel in the next couple of months, I mean, at the moment it's quite scary again, the saying that the numbers are going up. But I think it's going to take till Christmas for everything to get back to normal. And it will go back to normal, because a lot of people don't listen. I think we should do something different. I like the way that, like in my gym, yeah, you have to book it. I prefer that. It's not just for our protection, but I like the way it's done. It's not rushing. You've got a slot, you go on your slot, and it's normally the same kind of people. And it just looks all neat and tidy in a box, you know? I like that. And I like the way how you go into the High Cross. You go through one way and you come out the other way. You know, I think that's a nice rule. It's like respecting people. And I thought, why didn't we ever have this before? Why do people just all bump into each other and walk like a hurdle? You know, like a hurdle sheep, just take them all in. So I like that one way, no, you know, entrances. Just bear in mind that you don't know where these people have been and you don't know who the carriers are. And keep your hands clean, sanitising. Because that's all it's happened from, not just sanitising. And like, we had a wedding last week, and I'm glad I didn't go. Apparently, all the boys' side, they've all got COVID, and they've had their second injections. Yeah. And that was just by sitting so close on the tables and hugging each other. Yeah, that's the first COVID wedding we've been to, and we still need to put them signs up. Because we don't know what's going to happen next. We're not in control of this virus. The messages have, especially to the ethnic minority, because now it's aware at the gurdwaras, the temples, you know. It's not just all keeping it English. It's telling other people who are finding it difficult to understand. I like the big signs that are up. I like the advertisements on the radios, on the TVs, in places of community places. You know, they've got the signs up and everybody's trying to educate every individual, you know. I will continue encouraging people who are around me as well to wear the face mask and tell them to keep their sanitizers with them, especially like my daughter's still at school. So I've always told her, be careful and don't share drinks or food, you know, because it's hard for the young kids now, and especially people that haven't got the symptoms, because it's not going to just go away, is it? So we just need to really educate people about germs and spreading, you know, because we all want to save the NHS, really. We all want to be happy and normal. And the only way we can do that is by being together and supporting us all. Yeah.
My name's Helen Petman. I'm from the Evington Echo, which is a local community news sheet letter that goes out once every 2 months. And we rely totally on volunteers to help us do that. We've been running for a long time, 40 years, but recently we've had to look at our insurance and everything else and what we are wanting to do, and so we formed a charity called Friends of Evington to run the Evington Echo and also to run environmental things as well. And it's all been very problematic to think through how we work with Leicester City Council, but and knowing who's who in Leicester City Council so we know who to talk to has been incredibly difficult. But it may be sorting itself out, because Leicester City Council now have an organisation called LEV, Leicester Environmental Volunteers, where people can just log in and then go along to anything that Leicester City Council set up. So that they might want to they might take you out on the boats to do river clearing or all sorts of things. When you go along to those events, you aren't you don't have much of a say. You're just volunteering to do what you're asked to do. Which is fine, and it suits a lot of volunteers I know who just like to do a little bit and don't really want to get involved in how it all works. But I think I'm a bit different, because I do want to get involved in how it all works. And so we affiliated with the Royal Horticultural Society, which means we're part of East Midlands in Bloom, who actually run things for the East Midlands, and their method of working is that they want to set up throughout the country. It's your neighbourhood groups, which can be any groups of people getting together, deciding they want to do a little job in their town, which may be just putting up hanging baskets outside their own houses, and they just have to have three independent people, that three unrelated people that are part of the group, and then they just get going. And that worked very well. Because it enabled, part of Leicester City Council, not all of it, wanted to have the RHS involved, and so we carried on, and we got permission to work on various beds and things in Evington, and do projects. Though sometimes the decision making was taken away from us when we were working just on parkland, so we decided that we would just become Friends of Evington in an independent group, and that was supported by the East Midlands in Bloom, and who also said, why don't you become a Bloom Group? A Bloom Group means that in your area you are supporting other IYNs and people who want a garden for you. And that's okay, except that Leicester City Council have said that we have to work with them in order to be a Bloom Group. I interpret it, because I of my environmental interest, in meaning that the people that are around can have an input into making their streets and their spaces better, and actually make a difference with this climate change thing that is very scary, so that we can have a biodiverse places, and we can input and we can learn through doing, as well as being told what we should do. I think it is about helping them to get over the obstacles that we had to get over. You know, they sometimes it doesn't work to have a committee approach. When you want to actually do something, it's better to just have a leader in the community who will go for it, and that leader will discuss the rules that they want for their group, but they make their own rules up, and they don't have to go through all this election processes. But then I always think, well, you do need some democracy, and so the idea we had was to have one local group that members could join, and that was democratically run. But again, that can be overturned with people who want power and want to take over that group. So we have to be very careful to keep and make sure that who we have as trustees are good people that are dedicated to really helping. I think it's positive in that, for example, I've been able to write the risk assessments for a number of very small groups that have got leaders that will take responsibility, and then they can get on quickly with doing what they want to do. Now, they usually they can develop as well, but as soon as they want constitutions, then they're on their own. They can't have our insurance. They say what they want to do and they get on with it, and if they grow and they grow big enough, then they can get their own insurance, can't they?
You're listening to Leicester Build Back Better Stories, conversations about how communities across Leicester are planning for change following the pandemic. For further information about each of the topics covered in the programmes and extended versions of the conversations, go to Leicester Stories website, leicesterstories.uk.
Hi, I don't suppose you've got a moment to answer some questions.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just walking around to the city asking people how they felt about the place.
This place is good, it's chill, relax, yeah, and enjoy staying here.
Is there anything about the city that stands out in your mind that makes it feel unique?
Personally, I think it's very quiet, it's very chill, it's a good place to enjoy retire life. Yeah, that's it.
Is there anything you'd like to see improved or done differently in the city?
For now, I think there's nothing to improve. Yeah, I think it's good for me for now. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Is there anything about the city, anywhere you can go, anything that you do that gives you a sense of community or belonging?
For now, I haven't been here for long, so yeah, excited to try out all this.
Yeah, nice. I like this city, yeah, really good.
Is there anything about the city that makes it feel unique for you?
Don't know. Museums and stuff like that, you know. Old heritage buildings. Yeah.
Any improvements you'd like to see in the city?
Improvement.
Like perhaps something that's not here that you'd like to see here, or something that's not quite working well?
You know, maybe some playgrounds for children, maybe, you know, more. I don't know. Nothing really. It's quite nice here. Yeah.
Is there anywhere you can go in the city, anything you do that makes it feel like home for you? Where you go, feel a sense of community, belonging?
Not sure. Everything feels like home. It's really nice here. You can sit down if you want, you know. You can walk around if you want. Bring tea, coffee, whatever.
Well, I don't know Leicester too well, but I've liked it because there's lots of independent cafes and restaurants. That's what I've got today. Yeah. But, yeah, I like it. I think it's quite... Because we're from Birmingham, so it's quite a bit smaller. But
contained.
But I do like it. It's got a good vibe about it, I think.
Yeah. So you're from Birmingham, you've come into Leicester
today.
Yeah,
well, my mum's from Leicestershire, so she's taken us on a little trip today, day out today.
I think it's a bit sad.
Yeah.
Like, this used to be, like, the main shopping centre, and now it's... Well, it's still shopping centre, but it's the nature of the shops have changed, the vibes changed. This, you know, that's time. You know, time moves on. People go online. That's why we've got Poundland. Everyone loves Poundland. You know.
It's a dump, mate. A terrible, filthy dump. You know, when I was young, this place was beautiful.
Yeah.
There's too many homeless people on the streets, and it's not their fault. Too many drug addicts. Too many aggressive beggars. Not enough police around. And I tell you what, my mother, who's nearly 90 now, she won't come into town anymore. She's still fit, she's able. She's too scared to come in. Yeah. You go down to that bus station down there, they're all hanging around there. You make a complaint to the council, they don't do nothing. The Leicester City Council, I'll tell you now, they're a total and utter waste of time. Honestly. A total utter waste of time. Don't matter what complaint you've got about your housing, just take no notice of you.
How do you feel about the city?
Well, I love it. I'm originally from Manchester and moved here 7 years ago, but I think it's brilliant.
Right. So
there's loads to do, loads of nightlife is brilliant as well.
Cool. So seeing as you have had experiences with other cities, is there anything about the city, that you feel makes it unique?
I don't know. They've got a lot of nice country areas and I like that. And the council's really invested in stuff. In gardens and stuff, and we like going for walks and stuff. It's nice. I like Halley Shopping Centre as well.
Is there anything about this city you feel like needs improving?
More cycle lanes would be nice. Not on Beaumont Lees Lane, where it's an irritant. But yeah, it would be nice to more cycle lanes. Probably like more of the city centre cordoned off from cars. I would prefer that. You know, around that area. I don't know the street names, but. Around, you know, where the ice cream shop is and all that, and a bit further out, I'd like all that cordoned off. That'd be perfect, so you could walk around without panicking about. And probably more cycle stations. We went York, and there was like electric bikes everywhere, and them things would be nice as well.
I'm Ben Lowe, and I'm the group coordinator for Greenpeace Leicester, which is the local group representing Greenpeace in Leicester and Leicestershire. So the surrounding area, and what we do is basically promote and deliver the main Greenpeace UK campaigns, basically, which can be on a whole number of different issues, so they can involve a lot of different things. So sometimes you have like a direct campaign against a particular. Sometimes it can be the government or sometimes particular sort of corporations about various different issues. They're always obviously kind of having an always environmental issues, but sometimes they kind of sort of cross over into other things as other issues as well. So at the moment we're running a campaign called Operation Ocean Witness, which is about these things called marine protected areas around the UK, which is like a conservation area at sea. And unfortunately, these areas aren't really providing any protection for the biodiversity in those areas. So the current campaign is to call on the government to basically make sure the protection is there. So that's sort of the type of thing. So, you know, that's sort of thing that we cover. And before that, there was a campaign against Tesco, which was about their deforestation being involved in their supply chain for meat. So the meat that they were buying had connections to the forests being basically cleared in Brazil, in the Amazon. And we were calling on them to basically cut that out of their supply chain and move towards more plant-based sort of alternatives. So we deliver these things in a lot of different ways. So sometimes we go out and actually just, you know, they do street stalls speaking to people. Sometimes, you know, there's things like marches, things like sort of more direct action. So you might take an action in a store. So you might go to your Tesco store and, you know, deliver. We delivered for the Tesco campaign, for example. We delivered messages from an indigenous leader from the Amazon, which had a message from her to Tesco, and we delivered that to the store managers in all the various different stores throughout Leicester, the Tesco stores throughout Leicester. And then obviously there's a political element to it. So there's a few different things. So we'd also get in touch with, there's like a whole sort of part of Greenpeace which is dedicated to speaking to your MP and getting them to do something basically about whatever it might, you know, whatever issue it might be, effectively like a kind of a sort of form of green lobbying, but on behalf of basically, well, people and the planet, which is what Greenpeace is about. So that's in a nutshell, that's roughly what we do. Well, from a Greenpeace perspective, Build Back Better would refer there's a concept that they have called what they call a green recovery. So the idea was that obviously you had an economic kind of fallout from the pandemic. So you had two crises. So you had the pandemic, which was a crisis, and then you also at the same time you had these other crises going on in the background. So we have like a biodiversity loss crisis that's going on, and where basically species are going extinct at an alarming rate. And then we also have the climate crisis as well, which is, you know, just, well, we all, I think we've sort of experienced events like heat waves and droughts and flooding that are all just examples of that happening all over the world. So following that, obviously, so you had all the like multiple crises to deal with, and the thing is sometimes it, because of the pandemic being like right in our face, effectively, people can almost sort of forget that the other things are happening in the background, and also they can be worse. So anyway, so there's this concept of the idea of a green recovery, which is the idea that the government. And this is something that apply, you know, not just to UK, but as a concept for any place, any government, to basically invest strategically to deal with the economic problems that the pandemic created, and also at the same time deal with the environmental, the climate, you know, the climate crisis, biodiversity crisis that we've got at the same time. So you're sort of basically killing two birds with one stone, and that's what we'd. That's what we, from, you know, Greenpeace and many environmentalists would recommend, is like a green recovery. And the thing is with this as well is it's like a win-win. So you can sort of create certain policies, for example, and strategically invest in things as a government to encourage like the private sector to do things which will both tackle climate change and also at the same time provide jobs for people. So and it's kind of revolves around, there's about four or five kind of sort of areas that a green recovery would cover. So you'd have transport would be one area, energy would be another, housing is a third one, and then also restoring nature, and moving towards a circular economy, which the last two are sort of, they're going hand in hand a little bit. I mean, they're all connected really. But so what you can do is you can, in certain areas, you can create jobs at the same time as you deal with the problem. So say for example in housing, you can have like what they call things like heat pumps being installed and insulation and things like that. So, and the thing is, these will be good for people, not just like in terms of employment, but also in terms of their actual people's ordinary lives as well. For example, so like with housing, we're supposed to have one of the most draftiest housing in Western Europe. Apparently, people have what are called burdensome bills for heat in their homes, and also in terms of living in a sort of a drafty, poorly insulated house, actually that contributes to ill health as well. And then in the turn, because you have all these people suffering with ill health as a consequence of that, you also lose money economically, because those people aren't going to go to work, those people aren't going to turn up to college, you know, those people, you're missing and out on all sorts of opportunities and things in the process of doing that. So if you invested, and you can also sort of encourage the private sector in this sense to kind of create jobs in the sector of kind of, I mean, it would cost money, these things do cost money, but the thing is dealing with climate change is something, in order to deal with it, you do have to put some money on the table to deal with the problem. And the thing is, if you don't do that, then you only get, you sort of, and you end up getting bitten, and you know, when it comes, because climate change is actually bad for the economy in itself. So it's, you know, it's a false economy to think, oh, we'll just save, we'll scrimp and save money on these things. It does actually make more sense to invest in projects like the green recovery would cover. So you could create like a warm homes initiative where, so you create jobs in terms of insulating homes, you know, heat pumps, solar energy, things like that. So you create jobs, you can also make the initiative so it focuses more on people, the poorest basically. So then the people who've got the draftiest homes, they're the ones that come to the front of the queue, and then people who can afford it, you can then sort of do things to sort of incentivize that, so people who are able to pay for, you make it more attractive to them effectively, and then the people that can't afford it, they get a warmer home, then they have better health, they're more productive, you know, and also at the same time you've also created jobs, you see. And as you can do this in various sectors, you can do this in the energy sector as well, and the transport sector. I mean, my MP for my area is very interested in an organisation called MIRA, Motor Industry Research Association. They're very into electrification of vehicles, and do all sorts of wonderful work in that sort of area. And that's also part of a project. There's a thing called the Midlands Engine Project, which is like a connection of various different businesses throughout sort of the Midlands, basically. So Leicester and also the surrounding counties. And with that, you can basically encourage development for us to transition to electrification of vehicles. So because you with the green recovery, your target is ultimately, is essentially people and the planet. Is kind of what you want to focus on. So you want to both reduce your emissions, so and also provide something that is actually better for people, ordinary people, at the same time. So the warmer homes thing would be one example of that. So they benefit, and then also the economy would benefit at the same time. And you'd also, you know, create an employment there as well. There's also a lot of opportunities for employment in the electrification of vehicles as well, because we need to move faster towards obviously transport is a huge source of emissions for us, one of the biggest, and you can move towards a more electrified network of both like public transport and personal transport as well, and there's jobs in that, and also ordinary people can benefit, and the same goes for the energy sector as well. And also restoring nature as well. The circular for example, like the circular economy idea is, you know, obviously, because the current economy, the economy that we have at the moment is more, is based around, it involves waste, basically. Things that it's extractive, things that there's a lot of waste going in there, which is obviously terrible for the planet. So whereas if we move towards more a circular economy, then, you know, the zero waste economy, effectively, that we've eliminated that waste, we've managed to, you know, do things in a different way, in a clever way, and some of that would involve repair, and some studies have suggested that you could create, well, four times as many jobs using that model of reuse and repair and repair anything. So rather than, you know, rather than buying a mobile phone or buying any product you take your pick, and then it basically just getting thrown away, you can then refurb it, reuse it, use the materials again in some way, and there's jobs in that as well. So you can, yeah, and it's not just something that sort of people from Greenpeace are a fan of, because there have been actual, like, economists and financial experts who have also said, you know, investing in the green side, in a greener economy, is actually the way to go as well. Because you look at things like fossil fuels industries, things like that, they're being propped up and subsidised. So there was a report a few years ago by, I think it was called IESA was the organisation. They did some research, and it was something like $130 billion were being given to the subsidised to put into the fossil fuel industry. And then they reckoned that if you actually took that $130 billion and then just put it in towards renewables, it'd actually almost like create an energy revolution, rather than instead you're just putting. So there's this kind of, at the minute, we're doing this thing where we're just sort of putting good money after bad, I think it's the phrase, you know, sort of what it doesn't make any. Because if you really want to tackle climate change, you have to do something. You have to change things. You have to change a lot of things, and it's not impossible. But if you look at the things like say the fossil fuel industry, it doesn't make any sense to prop it up, really, because, you know, you're just encouraging and propping something up which you know that you're going to have to get rid of or kind of phase out in the end anyway. So why do that? You know, why put money into things? It's like, especially in this country as well, because we have a target of reaching net zero by 2050. So if you're really serious about reaching the target, then it doesn't make sense to invest in things that you know you're kind of going to have to move away from at some point. So really, invest in all the things that are actually moving in the direction that you need to go to reach your target. With Leicester specifically, I think there are, in some ways, we've actually received some praise in some areas, and we've got some good initiatives. So Leicester has some good initiatives in some areas, but in it kind of could do better in a lot of different ways, really, and the same. Well, the same could definitely be said about the government as well. So, and have some good initiatives. I mean, going back to the 2050 target, for example, is something where the government have a really good target, but then aren't really doing enough to reach the target. So, you know, things need a bit more work in areas. With Leicester, I think we could. There's improvements that could be made to our transport system, for example. We did an event a little while ago where we invited some varied number of speakers to talk about transport throughout Leicester, and one of the things was freight was an example in the transport system, is that we are sort of in a unique position to. You know, where we're located, to be sort of like a transport hub, for example. But it's unfortunately, we're not really taking enough advantage of it. So in terms of, let's say, like public transport, for example, is one. It doesn't, for people, I mean, I guess this might apply to other areas as well, but in Leicester, the public transport system could make, if you really want to kind of improve things a lot, then a lot more could be done to kind of make it more joined up, and also make it more cost effective as well. I mean, I got the bus in today, and it was like £3.40 for the ticket to get in, and compared to driving in, because I'm also a car owner as well, because I need that for work, unfortunately. The cost is just, it's just, the difference is phenomenal. I mean, I'm paying about £18 a week on petrol to go to work, but then if I wanted to go and buy bus, then, well, for the area I'm in, that could even go as much as £40 a week or something like that. It doesn't make any sense. So, and these things don't make any sense for throughout the area as well. Here, it doesn't make any. You need to kind of make public transport make sense if you want to sort of benefit ordinary people. And that's the same thing with, and this can sort of apply to, because people need to get about to, you know, if you're looking for a job, for example, and you haven't got a car, then you're really not in a, you know, it's not really kind of giving you the support it could give you, really. It's kind of making things difficult. It's sort of, in Leicester, we have this tendency to, again, probably true of other places as well, to sort of think of developments and things in terms of car use. And really, we want to be moving away from car use, really, if we're to reduce the, you know, to reduce emissions. I mean, this isn't to say, you know, cars, you know, won't exist, but ideally you want to make public transport more attractive. But then things are not really done with that in mind. They're sort of done with car use in mind. That's sort of the go-to. And people are criticised, like other environmental groups in Leicester, for example, Climate Action, they've criticised the council's climate plan. So here, so for example, there's, in terms of like targets and initiatives, there's plenty of good stuff in the council's plan for how to deal with these things, which will also sort of benefit people as well, because it obviously includes green spaces, includes a lot of the areas that are covered in mentioned in the green recovery idea. But the thing is, they're not kind of robust enough, really. So it's sort of, oh, we will consult on doing this, and this will be dependent upon consultation results, and this will be dependent upon the feedback from this. And so, well, you kind of know already that you need to do these things, you know. I mean, the public do need to really, sort of make demands of the government and others to make a real positive change that's meaningful. Because I mean, it's sort of, yeah, it's been a long time where people have been talking about climate change and various other problems as well besides for a long time, and it's sort of been, oh, we'll do something about that. And it's not that improvements haven't been really made, because I mean, in terms of green energy, the UK has made a lot of, like, for example, as one example, that made a lot of really good strides, and like there's points where it's been the bulk of our power supply has come off of that, which is, so you know, there's been progress, but the whole, and so there's been progress in a number of areas, and it's like sort of heading in the right direction, but the thing is, yeah, well, in some ways it's heading in the right direction. There's other bits that are heading in completely the wrong direction, really, like coal mines and, you know, oil projects and things like that that people have been approving. It doesn't really make any sense. It's all a bit too little, too late, and that's, you know, that's the getting people involved, getting people to sort of demand change and to do, you know, to really put pressure on government or on the people in power. That's not always it's not necessarily always the government, I guess. There's a few things to realise with that, and it's a little bit of a tricky one as well. is that because I have these conversations with people, with other people, people who aren't what you might call a Greenpeacer. You know, there is a sort of a what can you do sort of conversation that you have, and it's like, well, is there really any point? You know, and that's a it's not always the easiest conversation to have, because it can feel like that, like there isn't any point. But I think there's a few things you have to think about with that. So one thing I would kind of say, well, I say a few things in response to it. One thing I think we need to appreciate how far we've sort of come. So, for example, people have been. So you can get this feeling sometimes with various sort of, if you go on a march, or if you email your MP, or you do something for as part of a campaign. The thing can go through people's minds is like, am I really making any difference here? But you do a number of things. So let's say if you email your MP, then you let your actual MP know that you're bothered about this problem, for example. And if an MP gets enough, enough people being bothered about a problem, they may not even be a tenth of the people that voted for him, them. So like, but it kind of comes into their awareness, and they're like, oh well, this really matters to people. I need to kind of stand up for this. And then there's stories of people in the lobbying network at Greenpeace who have dealt with. There's one guy from the Leicester area who is MP. He dealt with him over many years, and his MP was just like, why are you bothering with this? But over the years, he kind of got behind it, and it's so you can, and that can be something. So if we make people make those connections, and they also realise that actually there still is hope, other people care about it, and we can do something, and also if they're made aware of the sort of injustice that's happening, whether it be to other people or the unfairness, maybe I might say that instead of injustice, but I think both words probably apply. Then that kind of can be sort of something that will galvanise people to get involved.
You've been listening to Leicester Builds Back Better Stories, conversations about how communities across Leicester are planning for change following the pandemic. For further information about each of the topics covered in this programme, and to hear extended versions of these conversations, visit the Leicester Stories website, leicesterstories.uk. Leicester Stories is supported by the Audio Content Fund and was developed with assistance from De Montfort University, the Documentary Media Centre and the Xynthia Trust. Thanks to Ryan Clayton for additional content production. This is a Decentred Media production by Rob Watson.